Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Jules Gill, it's Friday, it's the UBP, it's the Untitled Planet Podcast. I'm Scott Tailford, you are Jules Gill.
That's me rolling all of them together on my soundboard.
In a Sonic-like fashion, even though we weren't going to talk about Sonic, because you were like, I don't want to talk about every single hour of the day.
Listen,
I'm not playing anything else.
I'm happy to talk about Sonic, but I told you last week that my approach to it was an apathetic shrug. I told you that it was an apathetic shrug with meh underneath as a subtitle.
Like, maybe I'm still like that. If you saw the majesty, the 210 million box office majesty that is Sonic 2.
Listen,
destroying
mate,
lives.
In I am 34 years old and I have seen a lot. I have done a lot and I feel that my life is arguably going to be worse from seeing Sonic 2 because I am starting to look at life and how much time I have left.
I purposely left out most of the Sonic questions.
Go on, then.
I thought I'd give you a reprieve from me coming at you with Sonic stuff all week. First question is from McAllister NYC, who says, happy lad. I've messed that up entirely.
No,
happy
yeah,
lads. Happy lads, howdy Friday. Seeing reports of Sony and Microsoft wanting to put adverts in games. Any idea how that would even work? And would you play a game with ads in it? Have a lovely weekend. Same to you. Now, these reports that have come out, one of them's from Insider, the other one's from Business Insider. Both of them are pretty much the same thing in regards to Sony and Microsoft wanting to put adverts literally in games. So billboards would change. Maybe the side of a mug might change or whatever it is. But the Sony side of things also mentioned putting adverts in pause menus. So this isn't a brand new thing. If a lot of game companies tried this in the 2000s, Burnout Paradise, Saints Row 2, whatever. What do you think of this stuff? Would you be okay with it? Or does it just feel a bit too intrusive?
It's so any time that we have real world companies interacting with video games, I always feel like there's a degree of oiliness that I don't actually appreciate. Like, I know that we make a lot of fun about Death Stranding having weaponized piss bombs made of monster. and there's a comedy value to that, but it is actually kind of gross at the same time that it's just like so egregiously in your face. Like, this is the brand that is sponsoring this video game.
Oh, yeah, there's AMC and, like, adverts all over that thing.
There was like Doritos in Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater, or there was some advert that they tied up with on that one. It was SSX Tricky or SSX 3 that had loads of billboards advertising Mountain Dew and stuff like that. And it was like lots of, and Mercenaries 2 infamously had an achievement tied to destroying all of the billboards that was in the game alongside so many other things, which was actually the devs fighting back against the publisher saying you have to have in-game advertisements for real world.
We just had
products.
That go up in one of the videos.
I actually wrote that. I was like,
this thing is interesting though. Because if it's like a live portal between, you know, like say you're Sony and you give like Snickers like access to your billboards, and then they just obviously they'd have to still run it past someone. But I think the idea of a more like a live connection between the advertising company, like I don't mind if a billboards, I don't mind if a sports arenas and stuff, like but I don't know.
So I can understand if you're playing like Fight Night back in the day, or you're playing like a FIFA game or any of the new MMA stuff, you have real world brands integrated into the sport because it's all over the octagon and their trunks and whatever they're wearing. That's in a way is fine. But if they started going like you've just scored a goal in the new FIFA game and it goes the replay sponsored by Snickers and then takes a 5-second break to talk about Snickers before it shows you the gameplay, then I feel that that is an intrusive and unnecessary component, that the benefit of which is going straight to the publishers. Mm-hmm. It's not, we do not, as consumers, benefit from this decision at all. No. And we are paying all of this extra money for a video game experience that is meant to be an escape of some sort from our own reality, where we are advertised to relentlessly.
Well, that's the thing. And I was saying on the video that we did, that YouTube adverts have only got more intrusive as well. Obviously, we rely on them. We're a business, but like the double ad, the double 20-second ad is very regular these days. The interesting thing with this is that so far, both Xbox and Sony have only talked about applying these advertising models to free-to-play titles. And I wonder if that's because the loot box model, the microtransaction model, the NFT model, they've all imploded. They've all been so roundly hated. And it's like, you know, if you're a dev team that wants to sort of run any sort of AAA or, you know, moderately budgeted free-to-play title, you need decent wages for those people to maintain the servers, to maintain the teams themselves. Is this just the next version of how do we pay these teams over time?
Now, I agree that that is, on a free-to-play model, probably the most acceptable of a non-acceptable form, that I would say, because, like you say, it allows them to cover base costs. The problem is that they will still be run alongside the microtransactions. They will still run alongside the NFTs. They will still be run alongside all of these horrible practices. So what we're doing here is just adding like another tire to the fire, and it's stinking out our streets. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be sniffing on rubber.
I said to Josh, it'll get worse before it gets better. And as much as they're saying we're trialing it in free-to-play titles, if it works and it makes them a lot of money, then I wouldn't put it past someone like Sony, who, you know, are helping Polyphony Digital charge an insane amount of money for a single digital car to not put it in premium titles too.
The problem then starts to stem of when the advertising is a slippery slope. If you allow it in like the pause menus or on billboards, that's one thing. But if you then start adding in that there is for a nominal fee, you can play the game without adverts. You are then turning advertising into a microtransaction paywall, effectively, that you can get over. Then you've got to start looking at how games will start applying these real world logos and advertising things like, there is a new Cadbury's Dairy Milk Mercedes-Benz collaboration for...
It's the new Eggman.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it'll be like GTA 5, and you'll be like, oh, you can only buy this pack if you watch a certain amount of adverts, or you'll get a discount if you watch a certain amount of adverts and sign up to a mailing list. You know what I mean? They start like using them to encourage players to give up actual personal information more so than they've given in the game, add them to mailing lists, like to future scams, cold calling and stuff like that. It is a very dangerous thing to allow them into the video games in any form.
Yeah, personal data is mentioned in some of these reports as well. And also the fact that they only want to have a select amount of brands that would be greenlit to be as part of the platform and everything.
We also have to worry about as well how brands would actually start to affect gameplay elements. So for example, if you had a Mountain Dew sports car, right? Go bear with me on this one. And you were putting it into like the new Gran Turismo. They may say, right, well, we don't want to show our car that we've spent all this money like advertising to have a real world collision damage affect it, because we want our brand to remain there. We don't want to ever see like a wreckage with Mountain Dew written on it. That doesn't do well for our brand.
Right.
They might make it so that the gameplay means that that particular car won't receive damage because
this
of the fact
the old
of their sponsors.
Problem,
But then we start going into who has the actual relationship of power. Like you have the sponsors. Do they have say over what goes in the game and how it's presented, or does the game do the publishers and the developers go, no, you're lucky to be included in our game? It starts, the symbiotic relationship starts turning poisonous very quickly.
We've done so many adverts and we do so many like sponsored things, and all of those things come with specific ways to represent that brand, specific things to say, specific messages they want to get across. If you bring more of those things into a literal game space, then maybe that company doesn't want their billboard being blown up in an otherwise in a game otherwise filled with carnage, and that stuff just starts to feel weird. One thing I was going to mention, super quickly, is, you know, when you play like mobile games and sometimes you get the free version where it's like finish the level and then sit through an advert before you can do another level.
That would
apply to something like a Sonic game or whatever. I think that anything that is, you know, you could potentially see that model coming through as well.
It's a very, very slippery slope, and I really don't like that they would be adding it in. Unfortunately, though, the fact that they're already trialing it means that some people at the higher ups obviously think that there's a lot of benefit in this idea, and so we will likely see it within a lot of titles. titles come the end of this year, perhaps.
Yeah, well, so the Sony side, according to three insiders, they're apparently rolling them out across 2022, but I guess we'll see how it goes. I think it's going to tie in with the new PlayStation Plus stuff, because then you'll have more games in front of more people than ever, and then try and find some way of plugging a new Netflix billboard into your original copy of Tekken 3 or whatever it is. But that's, we'll keep an eye on that stuff for the rest of this. Yeah, next question from Darren Martin, who says, hello, legends. Hope you're both keeping well. Who is each of your favorite game developers and the games they've made?
Oh, good question. And thank you very much for the kind words.
Yes, thank you.
I'd say that my game developers that I absolutely love are Devolver Digital. They are just very, very cool. All of the games that they put out are amazing. Are the guys who make Bastion and Transistor? That was Super Giant.
Oh, Super Giant. Yeah, Super Giant. Giant. Such a shout.
Yeah, like every single title that they touch is just pure and utter gold, my friend. I'm also, at the moment, I've just started a playthrough of Death's Door, and I don't know who makes that. Let me just
Death's Door is very nice. We should throw in, if we're going to talk, because Devolver, like, they house so many smaller devs. Like, they get their name out there, but they're the publisher, but they tend to sort of get alongside devs too.
Devolver Digital published Death's Door, and it's Acid Nerve, who I love this game. I think it's absolutely brilliant. So they've also made Titan Souls back in the day as well, which is also a brilliant game.
I never
got
through Titan Souls, but I finished Death's Door. That game's gorgeous. I think in terms of, I think of Devolver as like the A24 of games. I feel like they have a very good deft hand of just kind of go, okay, this deserves a budget, this deserves a budget. I love it because they've got Trek to Yomi coming out at the start of next month. It's really cool, nice black and white samurai game. For me, I sort of just go with a mix of like Insomniac and Naughty Dog. I like now how much Naughty Dog pushed the cinematic side of things. I used to adore Hideo Kojima. It's not that I don't that much anymore, but Death Stranding, like the way that story goes.
By the way, have you played the director's cut of it yet?
Yeah. I didn't finish it, but I
was about to say, what do you think of it?
I thought it was solid. I mean, Josh finished it. He thought he couldn't notice any difference, but it's like, really? they did add like a lot of, it was more gameplay stuff that they added, like different ways to get packages across the land. You can get a big, like a big cannon that fires.
Yeah, I was about to say, the cannon looks hilarious.
And you can do like stunts on bikes and stuff. So those things are cool. But in terms of like, in terms of like auteurs and everything, I love Corey Barlog. I tend to be like specific people. Like, I love Yuji Kawa's artwork, or I love Corey Barlog's writing, or I love Neil Druckmann's project direction. So I would go to, like you said, like Supergiant are a massive shout as well, because they're just so artistically minded. Hades was incredible.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned the singular sort of auteur directors. I was actually speaking to somebody within the business, and I won't name names, but he works for a very big publishing company. And he was saying that, like,
is it Peter Molyneux?
No, me and Peter are not going for pints down the pub. Peter. The thing is that he was saying that he personally doesn't like it when these directors get the sole credit for the projects that come out and it has their name plastered all over them. Because at the end of the day, there are countless devs and like testers of course, all these like amazing technicians that work on making the games. And it does kind of, to a slight detriment, take away the efforts of their work to basically pin it all on this one person. And he was saying, and again, I won't name names who about this person he was talking about, he was saying that this person in question used to arrive in the office and really not have much of a hands-on thing, was very happy to take credit for the work that people were doing.
Like a Rick Rubin approach.
Would show up to sort of like ideas and pitch meetings and just go, yeah, the general consensus seems to be fine. Yep, cool, fine, I will take it.
Well, that tends to be like the George Lucas thing, where they sort of come in and all the artists have done their work and they've got the storyboards ready to go and the different concept designers and everything. And they just walk around the room going like, yeah, not that, okay, that, right, yeah, sure.
Oh, man.
And then they get to walk away and get all the credit.
Have you seen that Ren and Stimpy short where they do... so I think it's Ren has told Stimpy that he wants an animation made. And so Stimpy's there like drawing for like hours and hours and hours, days and days, like furiously under really harsh conditions to get these animation panels done. And at the end of things, Ren walks through and he's like got this massive pointer that's got like a grabber on the end, and he just starts plucking the ideas off the wall. And he goes, no, we're not keeping that. We're not keeping that. We're not keeping that.
Right.
And at the very end of things, he's left with one or two ideas and that's it. And he's like left sobbing then. And like, this is actually a very like, I imagine that a lot of like artists, animators and game developers probably are like, yeah, this is a bit too close to home.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, these problems, like, yeah, this general business model has been a thing for as long as artists and business-minded people have collaborated. So I think, yeah, it's massively valid. Another team worth shouting out is Remedy. I feel like they've only gone from strength to strength. Obviously, Crossfire X is a big black mark in their ledger.
I was just about to
that's
say.
That's not. I'm going to argue that's not them. That's like when Metallica did the Lulu album. That's sort of like they helped someone else. So that's not their game. But whereas if you sort of, you know, you go from Max Payne 2, and Quantum. Well, Quantum Break was, I guess, like a weaker one, but Control is phenomenal, and even Quantum Break's production was still solid. Remedy would be up there for me as well. They're just in terms of anything that has an auteur stamp where you can see like a signature feel, is what comes out. I might just completely agree with you with Supergiant. They might be the single best dev as a team, creatively minded, gameplay wise, etc. Hades is incredible.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
The team behind Disco Elysium as well. The fact that they managed to
forget their name, something.
I can't remember. Apologies
it's like
to
ZA-OM or something.
So apologies to them. But the work that they put in there was one of those sort of like, we will take everything that the popular video game market tells us we shouldn't do and do it and double down on it. And what they achieved was not only a game that resonated with so many critics, but happened to sell incredibly well and with their enhanced editions that they put out, and with the version, the final cut that added in the voice lines as well.
Yes,
you have a game there that is like monumentally well told, but is so personal each and every step of the way.
Literally.
That you're just like, this is a love letter to the series, to the idea of point and click puzzle games and murder mystery stuff. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Like literally, hands down, that is literally the best written video game of all time. Like, it
Will not disagree with you on that.
No, like, I mean, go play Disco Elysium if you haven't. All the hype is real. Just go in and know that.
However, I actually wanted to give a little bit of a disclaimer to those who might actually go and pick up this game. do not be afraid if this game makes you feel a bit stupid from time
to time. That's what I was going to say. It reveals stuff about you. Yeah.
It throws around so many large concepts that the average person, I would argue, doesn't have a huge grasp on.
Like, no, I was quite lost with parts of it.
They'll understand like basic concepts to do with like the nihilistic tones and the sort of like capitalistic stuff that they're talking about. But don't go in there thinking that you need to have this lexicon there. What it does is encourage you to go and say, right, I'm going to take a break from this game and actually learn what they're talking about here. Like, what are they on about when they're talking about this like far-fetched concept that I don't understand? Once you come back to the game with that, you then start to realize how confusing it is to exist in Harry's body because of the fact that he doesn't have a clue what's going on half the time. It is very hard to understand some of the high-level concepts that people talk about in the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, believe it or not, it's just a load of hot air. And people are actually just wafting a lot of their own big ideas with fancy words and don't actually have that much to say.
Yeah, that's one of the best things about it. It's like a murder mystery like overall framework, but it is just this big melting pot on philosophy, big personal philosophies, politics, where you come down on different ways of living and different opinions that you have. And I love that it gives, obviously, if you play on PlayStation, I love that you get trophies that let you mark your profile, being like, super hyper left. Were you, or you thought this way, did you? Or you figured it out this way, did you? Or you didn't care about this person's feelings?
Yeah.
Like, that stuff's brilliant. And I think that, the genius of that game, the thing that apparently it took the dev team, I think it was 7 years or something, to get right, is that you are playing various thought processes. You're putting together the ability to think as you go. That's the genius thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you figure out different ways of thinking, or ways you already think that then manifest in the game as you play.
Because I love that it acts as like an almost direct challenge to people who approach games and say, I'm going to play this as a good guy. I'm going to play this as a bad guy. The thing is that we as humans, we make decisions every single day that are selfish, that are contradictory, that sometimes go against what we actually say and what we do. And it's like, this game actually forces you to realize that you can't play this game like a game. There is no outcome that is better by doing something 100% down a certain path because the ambiguous nature of humanity is reflected in this game. And I know I sound like one of those really like pretentious critics that it seems to be blowing a lot of smoke up this game, but it really is a special treat for those that are willing to put time and effort into learning its fundamentals and going with the game rather than fighting against it.
Yeah, it's absolutely immaculate. I think that the first time through, I mean, obviously you can replay it. There's a million ways you can play it, loads of different endings. But I feel like the first time through, that's the thing that sticks with you. And I feel like there's a real tone to Disco Elysium that's very like dour and sort of drained of all color, but it's the little fragments of life in there that it's brilliant. It's just go play Disco Elysium. It's a good time.
Yeah,
next question from Tristan Better, who says, which gaming franchise have you never been bothered about, but when you did play, you loved it? Theirs were Soulsborne games. Always looked at them went, nope, not for me. But then they've now Platinum, Sekiro, Bloodborne, and Elden Ring. So,
man, that's exactly what happened to Ash, who's obviously now working for PlayStation Access. That she was so nonplussed about the
she did hate Sekiro, but she eventually came around on it recently.
Yeah, and then she was like going through all of the Dark Souls stuff. She's going through Elden Ring and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, see, you love the franchise now because you've been like exposed to it in that way. But I tell you what, every single time I sit down and I play a FIFA game with friends, I have an absolute blast. I get my ass absolutely kicked. Like I'm not good at it at all.
Right.
And I always leave the experience thinking, man, I should probably like pick up a game one year and just have a go at it. But I never, ever do. But every single time I play it, I'm like, yeah, do you know what? I can see why people like this game.
I'm kind of having that, having that with the new WWE 2K22. I put a tweet out because I've still never done a single WWE match on it. It's just been AEW. I'm just modding everything
in.
And I can't say it doesn't fit this question entirely because I was a massive wrestling fan in the early 2000s. But coming back to it, I'm having a lot, like you said, I'm having a lot of fun with sports games, even if you usually don't bother with them.
Yeah.
My main one would be XCOM because I didn't bother with grid-based stuff and grid-based strategy stuff at all growing up. And then I finally played XCOM Enemy Unknown in 2012.
Yeah.
And that was like a light bulb, where have you been all my life moment, where I was like, oh my God, they were right about Final Fantasy Tactics. I should have played that alongside the main ones. And then just getting lost in as much grid-based stuff as possible. Mario and Rabbids give me all of it.
The sequel's coming out soon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be this year unless it gets delayed. But yeah, that'll be my thing. I guess that's almost like a genre thing, but definitely XCOM, where I was like, okay, this goes way further back than I thought. Huge deal.
I've got a kind of twist on that in a way, in the sense that I still don't get it in terms of a gameplay perspective, but I can understand why people are absolutely besotted with it. And that was, so I played a lot of DayZ when it came out, which is obviously a mod for Armor, which was like the originator, some would say, of the Battle Royale formula and the PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds sort of thing jumped off from that. Mm-hmm. Now, I never played PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I've never played it.
Really? Okay.
I've watched people play it, and I just can see that they can get a lot of enjoyment. And to be honest, I actually enjoy watching people play. I think that it's actually quite fun.
I think it's more fun as a spectator thing. It's got a lot better now, but it was ropey as hell when it first launched.
Now, Rich and Heppel and I went out to Germany to go and actually witness a PUBG event live, like a big sort of tournament. And when I sat there in the seats and I watched, like, there was literally thousands of people watching these teams play live, I was like, okay, now I get it. This is a sport event for some people. This is absolutely brilliant. All of these people here, they're not playing the game. They're watching other people play the game, and they are having the best time of their life doing so, because they can, like, analyze it like a coach would analyze watching back, like a play-by-play of their, like, sports team. And I was like, okay, I'm never going to pick up the game, and I don't actually like Battle Royale games, to be honest, that much but I will appreciate that what it did for the genre is
actually
amazing.
As well, about it for PUBG, they do really good spectator cams where, like, you know, the audience can be detached outside the house, knowing the guy's stuck in the bathroom, knowing someone's coming around the corner, and neither of them know where each other are, and then waiting for that stuff to kick off. Like, those moments can be really good. We got a bunch of questions about the death or the potential death of physical media. There's a lot of conversation around, or there's always conversation around physical versus digital. And with the PlayStation 5 coming back into stock, people saying, should they get the digital one or the physical one? Where are you generally at on that stuff? When was the last time you bought a physical video game? Because I hadn't for years. And then recently, I bought WWE physical. I bought Elden Ring physical. Elden Ring was because I wanted to have it immortalized on a shelf. I wanted the fancy edition with the different patches and the badges and the metal case and everything. And so I've kind of started getting, it's either to immortalize something or it's something that I don't know that I want to keep forever. So, like, WWE, I was like, this is such a random dalliance. I'm back into wrestling. I'm going to get the latest game and I'm going to download Adam Cole and only play as him forever. And so I did a lot of that. But other than that, I'd almost entirely buy digital. So it's like, I do kind of see where the death of physical stuff comes from.
Again, this goes back to the sort of like Disco Elysium gray nature of morality and humanity. I champion buying physical media. I have an extensive PlayStation 1 collection. But in all honesty, I am fully digital at the moment. I don't have space. Like, every other bit of space is either taken up by Warhammer, as you can see in my webcam. So it's either taken by Warhammer or board games. I don't have space to have a video game library. So I do buy a lot of digital stuff. And to be honest, a lot of the stuff, as I've said before, I get sent through for review. And that's usually in the form of digital copies.
They've stopped giving any physical discs these days.
I just checked to see when the last PS4 game that I remember buying. 2018 was the last time I bought a physical game. War? It was Valkyrie Chronicles.
Nice. See, I think, like, the thing is, I like the tactility of physical media. Like, I love vinyl. Like, I mean, I'm that guy. I'm the guy who brews coffee for 45 minutes and puts a vinyl on. I'm that guy.
Yeah, man.
Only occasionally, but I like it. And I like holding the thing that you love. It's why I collect all of my figures and collectibles and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I like having a physical representation of something. But at the same time, there is something to an easy access digital library of, I love entire franchises when you can just dip into an entire franchise.
Yeah.
Like, not to make every little thing about Sonic, but I do have every single Sonic game on my Xbox because they're all backwards compatible. And I bought Sonic Colors the other day because I was like, that's one of the only gaps in my library. And so when you go on my Xbox, every single Sonic game is there, all 30 years of them. And I think that's quite satisfying too, even though I don't know if it'd be more satisfying if it was a physical collection, maybe, but I'd have to get off the couch every time I want to switch a game, and I don't want to do that.
Well, the thing is that, like, James Niles and I, we fired up Streets of Rage 4 the other day, just for a little bit of, like, a chat and a chill and a play. And we were looking at it, and obviously we both got it on, I've got it on Steam, he's got it on Xbox Game Pass, and obviously it's free on there. Then it has the little tag on the bottom saying, leaving Xbox Game Pass pretty soon. And I was like, I do want to own this game. I want to have this copy of the game, but it is going. There is some point, it's like, I will not have a copy of this game unless I go and actually buy it. And I was a bit like, that is the problem with digital media. Any one time, the developer can revoke it. You can, as people found out when they had downloaded their own versions of PT, It was removed from the store. Mm. And then in subsequent updates, it would actually remove it from the system, wouldn't it? You'd have to actually find a way of getting around it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of Ubisoft games. There was a thing breaking last night of like Assassin's Creed 2 or various Ubisoft games on Xbox 360 and PS3. Their servers have just shut down. Ubisoft hasn't told anybody. But yeah, there's that side of it where, you know, server trouble or like the licensing can change hands or whatever it is. Like, yeah, that can almost invalidate your purchase at any point. Which is always a thing. But if you have physical media, you have the console, you can always get something online unless it has to be a server check, which can sort of help things last a bit longer.
Yeah, so do as I say and not as I do in this case. Try and keep physical media alive for a bit longer at least.
I think, yeah, I tend to go towards collector's edition stuff. Like I have a 250 mm-hmm. or 300 quid or whatever it was, Geralt behind me from The Witcher 3.
You love it, mate.
I love it, mate. I just want to get, I'd like having the, I'm debating getting this. Again, I can't not talk about Sonic. They've got a Sonic 31st anniversary figure and I'm debating getting him. I don't know how much he's going to be, but I want him. He jumps through the air and I'm sure he'll be £100, but I might end up getting him. But yeah, I like the physical thing as a way to immortalize certain releases, or the complete opposite where it's going to be something throwaway and I might as well trade it in and then get some money and get something else. We got also a bunch of questions because I asked people whether Elden Ring was game of the year. Literally call that right now, because I don't know if I fully agree yet. I can see the argument for it, but I thought we should talk about that because I'm going to throw in a negative and then you can see what you think. I asked people what they thought, and Andy Little said, Elden Ring isn't even near the top for me. I love Souls games, but that was a subpar game for them. The open world wasn't needed and reskinned boss fights were just meh.
Well, that is that is quite the statement. I disagree. I disagree, but I think that you are entitled to your own opinion, my friend. And if it's not for you, then it's not for you. I personally would put Elden Ring very near the top. Mm. But the reason that I was saying just give me 2 seconds is because I've just Googled the classic what games are coming in 2022 for now. Yes. And we're going to run through a few of them.
Yes.
And we're going to decide whether or not there are any contenders in the ones that are coming out. Okay?
Yes.
So obviously we'll start with the big one, Sonic Origins.
So Sonic Origins will be my game of the year. It might be Sonic Frontiers.
How can it be?
It looks great. It looks so good. I know it's just from 1992 again, but maybe that's all I need.
Okay. So we've got Evil Dead the game. Do you think that could be the game of the year?
Not really. I mean, it'll be a fun, diametrically opposed. What do you call that thing?
Yeah, it's asymmetrical.
Asymmetrical multiplayer and diametrically opposed. It'd be one of them.
I do think that there is some potential in the following one, Mario Strikers Battle League. Now, Mario Strikers was a phenomenal game on the GameCube. It could be the game of the year because of how fun it, like I was saying to you before, this could be my football game. This could be the game that like gets me in and keeps me hooked.
Well, I always love a good casual game in between my other bigger releases. So it probably will be that. Mm-hmm. I tell you what we're overlooking is Nintendo Switch Sports, the follow-up to Wii Sports. They're finally doing
game
the
of
next-
the year.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Wii Sports was people's game of the year in 2008, as I gesticulate with my hands. But I wonder how much that'll take off. That's out like next week or something. So I don't know.
We've got Xenoblade, depending on how you want to pronounce it, Chronicles 3. That probably will be some people's game of the year because it's very popular within certain camps. Saints Row is obviously coming in August.
I hope Saints Row is good.
I hope it's good, but I don't think it's going to escape GTA 5 Shadow. Unfortunately, everyone's just going to compare it side by side because they seem to be leaning into the we're wacky kids.
It's very, yeah. I don't know if you can do wacky these days. I don't know if we're just
It's a bit cringy now.
It's a bit like cringy. It's almost like if you steer into it, all of us online just go, I know what you're doing. And then we see 20 different memes every hour. So it's like, I don't know.
By the time the memes that they put in the game come out, they're dead memes. They're already dead memes the moment they happen.
Yeah.
I can't remember who said it. Oh, I want to say that it's my favorite person. H Bomber Guy said that you call something a meme when it's an inside joke that isn't funny.
Okay. I've got the original definition of that was in a Kojima game about like it's about mimetic imprinting of like digital media or something. It goes outside that. Like the original memes weren't digital. There's a whole thing there about what a meme is. It's something to do with capturing a moment or something.
So next time that you at home find yourself describing something as a meme, you are admitting deep down that you realize that it's not actually that funny. An inside joke, however, can be relentlessly funny.
It's true. I think in terms of games this year, though, that's why I would like, I'm looking forward to the Summer Games Fest. I'm looking forward to the different live streams that are being rumored for this summer because I hope a bunch of stuff gets slotted in because obviously Starfield's probably the nearest contender.
Yeah, because that's in November, that's coming out.
Yeah, and that's like Bethesda's first new IP in like 25 years or something. And I hope they actually make a competent video game. That would be nice.
Like, Gotham Knights could be a sneak smash hit.
I don't trust Warner Brothers to not monetize the living hell out of that, but maybe. I mean, multiplayer Arkham.
Possibly. I personally think that if it's not Elden Ring,
it'll be Sonic Frontiers. Yeah, I thought that. Yeah,
for me, if you're gonna have Sonic Frontiers, then I'll have Warhammer 40K Darktide because I know that that game will be a banger when that arrives.
Yes, I think that's the thing. In terms of, it feels like the bulk of this game's biggest titles are out the way. Like it feels like the opening salvo was just so insane that I'll be amazed if anything. I mean, it's not that I'm actually calling Elden Ring, but it feels like the most likely candidate.
Yeah,
just the most complete game, like 100 hours of constantly surprising, rewarding fantasy adventure stuff. I just don't know if anything's going to get anywhere close to that.
Yeah,
maybe
agreed.
God of War 2 if that drops, a surprise drops, but it'll be surprising. But for now, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. It's been the UBP, the UBP,
UBP,
the UBP. Massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. I know we managed to do a grand total of about four.
That's our record so far.
As is our ability to blab for half an hour. But we'll get to a lot more of them next week. But again, massive thank you for sending in all your questions. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me. And remember, you can follow us on the social medias at RetroJ for myself, and you can follow Scott over on Twitter at @LP89,
and we'll catch you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.